Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrī Bhaktivedanta ki jai, Rantara Śrīmad Bhagavatam ki jai, Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Nitai Goprima.
Okay, so tonight we'll finish chapter 7.
Finish hearing about the churning of the milk ocean and Lord Shiva, how Lord Shiva saves the demigods and the demons and everyone else in the universe from ultimate destruction. So tonight we begin with verse 31 and we go to verse 46. Finish the chapter.
Mother, you were asking that in the previous chapter, when Lord Vishnu appears, he says to the demigods that the poison known as Kalakuta will appear. Will be generated from the ocean of milk. But here it's the same thing as Hala Hala. Any significance for the two different names or the same?
I don't know. Not sure.
It's in the sixth chapter of Kalakuta. Poison known as Kalakuta.
Okay. You have to ask your guru. What the?
I'm not guru. I'm sorry about that.
Okay. I don't know what the difference is between them. It's probably just two different names for the one.
Six,
25. Mm-hmm.
And now
here
is 770.
Okay, write it down on your exam. Okay. Don't worry. O Lord Girisha, since the impersonal Brahman, effulgence is transcendental to the material modes of goodness, passion and ignorance, the various directors of this material world certainly cannot appreciate it or even know where it is. It is not understandable even to Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, or the King of Heaven, Mahendra. So, what of a Bandhu Prabhu? Can you read?
Brahma Jyoti is actually the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in Brahma Samhita. Rasya Prabhu Prabhu Jagat Amsa Kodi, Kodi Sko Ashesa, Vasudadi Vibhuti Vinnam, Tat Brahma Niskala Ananta Ashesa Bhuta, Bodhi Vahadi Kosam, Tam Mahanam. I worship Govinda, the Premier Lord, who is endowed with great power, the glowing effulgence of his transcendental form is the impersonal Brahman, which is absolute, complete, and unlimited, and which displays the varieties of countless planets with their different opulences in millions and millions of universes. Although the impersonal feature of the absolute is an expansion of the rays of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it does not need to take care of the impersonalists who enter the Brahma Jyoti. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 9.4, Maya Tadam Isam Sarvam Jahat Avyakta Murtina. In my impersonal feature, I create this entire universe. Thus the Avyakta Murti, the impersonal feature, is certainly an expansion of Krishna's energy. Mayavadis, who prefer to merge into the Brahma effulgence, worship Lord Shiva. The mantras referred to in text 29 are called Bhukani Panchobanisa Kavesha. Mayavadis take all these mantras seriously in worshipping Lord Shiva. These mantras are as follows: Tat Purushaya Vitmahe Sante Mahadevaya Dhimahi Vityayai Tanno Rudra Pratitaya Prachodaya Vrityayai Agorapyas Tama Ada Gorapya Maha Agropya Raksha Agorapyo Nidra Sarvapya Sarva Vyadha Sarva Sarvapyo Murti Namaste Sul Sutta Sutra Rubayas Krishna Vamadevaya Raja Jayasthaya Swaha Sreshtaya Kachya Rudraya Kalyana Kalaya Kama. Kala Vikarantyaya Antyaya. Kala Vikranaya Kriya. Balaya Vrdya. Balachaya. Pramatanaya Dhatray. Sarvabhuda Damanaya Bara Manyay. Ana Sosanyay. Unmaya Unmanyaya Jvara. Satyo Jada Prabhatyami Siddhyay. Satyo Jada Vai Namaha Satyay. Bhave Dityay. Abheve Lakshmai. Nadi Bhave Meda. Bajaswamam Antyay. Bhava Swaha. Ubhavaya Prabha. Isana Sarva Vidyana Sasinyay. Iswara Sarva Bhudana Abhayada. Brahmadi Padir, Brahmano Padir, Brahman, Brahmestada. Swame Astu, Mariche. Sadasivaya, Jwalime.
Thank you. Any points?
Is Prabhupada referring to previous verses from all these mantras? Or is it?
I think some of them are in previous verse. I don't know if the whole lot. I didn't look at the whole thing, but Prabhupada says in text 29 there's something which is mentioned there. So, anything else?
Lord says, Bhagavad Gita, in my impersonal future, I pervade the entire universe.
Brahmanohi pratishtaham. Any other points? So, the Bhagavatam teaches us, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabjate, that the Brahman, or the Brahmajyoti, is part of the Lord's existence. You cannot separate Brahmajyoti from Krishna. Wherever there is Krishna, there is Brahmajyoti. Wherever there is Brahmajyoti, there is Krishna. Right, so the two are inseparable, same as Paramatma. You cannot separate the three. Krishna is always present in all three. So the Mayavadis, unfortunately, they see the Brahman as being supreme, and they see now Krishna as being false. Whereas according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna or Bhagavan is the source of both Paramatma and Brahmajyoti. So they mix it up, or they turn it up the other way. Because they are envious of Krishna. That is the meaning of impersonalism. Mayavad philosophy is based upon envy of Krishna. Just like if you're envious of someone, if you don't like them, what do you do when they're speaking to you? Right, you turn on your back on them, or you look the other way, or you ignore them. So that's a sign of impersonalism. And impersonalism comes from envy. So when we're envious of someone, then we ignore the person. We try to blot them out of our consciousness. So because the Mayavadis are envious of Krishna, they try to blot Krishna out of their consciousness by ignoring him or pretending he does not exist. So it is a false understanding. So therefore they bring about a philosophy by word jugglery that the Brahmajyoti is the source of Bhagavan or person, or the personality of Godhead, you know, which cannot be substantiated or proven, but that is their philosophy. So out of envy, then they will justify anything. So Mayavadis, generally, they worship Lord Shiva, because they're in the mode of ignorance and they're impersonal, so therefore they tend to worship Lord Shiva. Now, Mayavad philosophy is very dangerous, and it can lead one to a negative destination in one's next life. Sometimes it is said the Mayavadis, or the impersonalists, they take birth as trees. Just like the tree is always trying to reach the light. So the Mayavadi is always trying to reach the light, Brahman. So it's a dangerous position, because you may get a serious reaction for trying to meditate only on Krishna's impersonal form and denying his personal existence. You could take birth as a tree or some inauspicious destination. So it is not auspicious. Whereas if you worship Krishna, the destination is auspicious. Because one will gradually go towards Krishna. Or one may even go completely to Krishna in the next lifetime. So, any points?
So why are they attracted to worshipping Lord Shiva?
Why are they attracted? Yeah. For worshipping Lord Shiva? I'm not sure exactly why, but the one reason is that Lord Shiva is the shelter of those in the mode of darkness or the mode of ignorance. So because they're covered by avidya or ignorance, then they may be attracted to him. Another reason is that Shankaracharya is the founder of the Mayavad movement or philosophy, and the Padma Purana says he is an incarnation of Lord Shiva. So there's some sort of encouragement to go towards Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva tends to give shelter to those who are covered by ignorance or tamas or darkness.
Do they worship him in personal form or is it impersonal? Shiva is also impersonal.
Well, ultimately, I think everything is impersonal. It's just like the Mayavadis also have deity worship. It's like we did Braj Mandal Parikram. I did it in 1994. And when we got around the back, it was one of the last few days. We were on the other side of the river. So it was over near Mahavan or somewhere like that. And we stayed near one ashram. And they were Mayavadis, but they were worshipping the deities. They had a temple and they had deity worship. And Radha, Krishna, like that. So it is not uncommon that the Mayavadis will worship the deities, but they have some sort of philosophy that they're worshipping the form to get to the beyond the form. So it's like a confused philosophy. Prabhupada says they're just juggling words and like that. So then they try to use a process to get beyond the process. So it's not a logical thing. It doesn't really make sense. Especially for us, it's very strange. Any other point?
See, this text 30, mm-hmm. the things which is written by the three modes of nature are your three eyes. And then he says, Vedic literature, which is full of verses, are emanations from your, from you, because they combine us through the various scriptures after receiving your blend. So is he talking about Lord Vishnu acting through Lord Shiva?
Yeah, I mean, it could be from the point of view that he is Sadashiva, or you could be worshipping him as Narayan. As Sadashiva, he is Narayan, so it could be from that level.
Because as I knew before that all the Vedas come from Lord Krishna.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. If it's one way to understand it would be that it's referring to
Sadashiva.
Anything else?
So he has given that Prabhupada explained that Mahavadis worship Lord Shiva seriously. So now Lord Shiva is very, Lord Sakalashvita was very serious, very easily pleased. So he is also control of the false ego. So does he see any predictions? Or because he also mentioned that Mahavadis, you know, their destination is they are very offensive. But he is a Vaishnava Yatashambhu. So will he give any predictions, pardon them, or still their destination is fixed?
The Mayavadi? Mm-hmm. Mayavadi, Prabhupada explains, might be in the introduction to the Bhagavatam, I think. Prabhupada explains that one of the reasons why Lord Shiva appeared as Shankaracharya and preached Mayavad philosophy was to attract those who are not sincere and keep them out of the bhakti cult, or out of the bhakti movement, away from the Vaishnavas. So it's like a service that Lord Shiva is doing. He's keeping all the people who are Otherwise, they might come and join the Hare Krishna movement. And then we'd have Maya buddies. Yeah, so Lord Shiva preaches like that to keep our sampradaya pure. Those who are envious of Krishna, then he preaches something else and they'll go away. Does that answer your question? Some clarification.
But do they get any benefit? That's my question. Because he carries the very highest position also, almost as position as the Lord Vishnu. And then the purpose is there, but do these Mayavati, do they get any benedictions or do they get any benefit out of this worship?
They get benefit, but then the benefit is also cancelled out. Prabhupada says, when the milk is touched by the lips of the serpent, so you got the benefit of drinking the glass of milk, but then you died. So they get benefit from worshipping, but then it's cancelled or it's overridden by the fact that they are Mayavadi. So you do devotional service, but then if you commit an offence, then your devotional service is impeded, so you don't get the benefits. Any other point?
Mahaprabhu says, Mayavadi bhaja sunile hoy sarvanash.
What does that mean?
That means those who hear the Mayavadi bhashya, the interpretation, they get destroyed.
And then what did Lord Chaitanya say we should do if we see the face of a Mayavadi? He says you should jump in the Ganga with your clothes on. Just jump into the Ganga if you see a face of a Mayavadi. So, any other points?
See, I really don't understand these 3 and 30 and 31.
Oh God.
Because in the 30 you say that these 3 modes of Nitya Nitya, your 3 eyes.
Achatike.
And then in 31 say that modes of goodness, passion and ignorance, Brahmjyoti is transcendental to these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where is Sadashiva and Sivashiva, I don't know.
These are just details, so I can't give complete answers because it seems like he's talking about Sadashiva in that verse. So.
And then he said that, the directors of the world. So, say Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and King of Heaven, but why then doesn't it say Lord Shiva's name as well?
There's only one person in this room who can answer your question.
You can.
No, Brinda. Brinda, can you answer this question for us? She doesn't always get the answers because she's on such a high level of consciousness, she doesn't always enter into our discussions. But Brinda, can you give a commentary on this? Or? Not today. So. We'll have to wait for another day when she's willing to talk.
Okay.
I think so. I can't answer the question directly. It seems like he's talking about Sadashiva, but I'm not sure. So I can't give complete. Okay. So read the next paragraph. So, Brihad Banu, you'd like to read the second paragraph?
The impersonal Brahma is unknown even to the other directors of the material creation, including Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, and even Lord Vishnu. This does not mean, however, that Lord Vishnu is not omniscient. Lord Vishnu is omniscient, but he does not need to understand what is going on in his all-pervading expansion. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that although everything is an expansion of him, he does not need to take care of everything. Since there are various directors, like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva and Indra.
Any points? So it has been described here that these personalities are so powerful that they can run things automatically. So they don't even have to be conscious of what they're doing. Even Prabhupada says in this section that the Lord, he doesn't know what's going on in the impersonal Brahmajyoti. It's just emanating from him, but he doesn't take interest in what's going on there because he is absorbed in his pastimes. So there are so many aspects of this creation which Krishna may not be directly conscientious of. Because he is so powerful, he just creates and things just run automatically. If we create something, then we have to check on it continuously. Right? Just like if we have a bread machine or a washing machine or something, you have to go and check on it. You can't just let it run. It can run for some time, but it can't just run continuously. Whereas Krishna is so powerful and Shiva is so powerful, they can create something and then it just runs itself. And they never have to check on it ever again. And it never breaks down and it always works perfectly. So that is Krishna's potency. That is Lord Shiva's potency. So, any points?
So Krishna controls us, then how does he not take interest? So are we running ourselves, or is he controlling us?
No, he gives you a machine. You're in a machine. And he lets the machine run itself, so to speak. It's being mainly things get controlled by Krishna's agents or his representatives. So who's in charge of our machine, our body? All the different demigods. Prabhupada said there's a demigod for blinking. So if you get the blessings of that demigod, then you can blink nicely. But if you don't get his blessings, then you do all sorts of strange blinking all the time. So it's Krishna doesn't do it directly, but he does it through his representatives. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Nice question, Jai Krishna. You should come to class every week. What's that?
I live with my mom.
When she gets back from India, I'll ask her if you can move into the Brahmachari ashram.
So.
No, I can ask her though. Just give me a couple of days and I'll see what I can do. So. Anything else? When annihilation is performed by the flames and sparks emanating from your eyes, the entire creation is burned to ashes. Nonetheless, you do not know how this happens. What then is to be said of your destroying the Daksha Yagya, Tripura Asura, and the Kalakuta poison? Such activities cannot be subject matters for prayers offered to you. Chaitanya, can you?
Since Lord Shiva considers the great acts he performs to be very unimportant, what was to be said of counteracting the strong poison produced by the churning? The demigods indirectly prayed that Lord Shiva counteract the Kalakuta poison which was spreading throughout the universe.
So what are the points? Good. Any other points? So we're dealing here with unlimitedly powerful entities. Lord Shiva is unlimitedly powerful. So this poison was taking over the whole universe. So you can imagine how much poison that was, right? And what did he do with the poison? Right? He put the whole thing in the palm of his hand. All that poison, he just manifested, he just took it all and put it in his hand. And when it was just enough to fit in his hand, then he just drank it and that was it. That's how powerful he is. Unlimitedly powerful. Same thing happens in the 10th canto when Krishna, after he fights with Kaliya, then he goes to the forest and they stay overnight. The bridge buses, because by the time Krishna conquers Kaliya, then it is too late for them to go all the way back to Nandagram. So they set up a camp close to the Jamuna. And there's one kund called Dhavanala Kund. Has anyone been there? You've been? Yeah, it's not far from Krishna Balaram Mandir. Probably a 15-minute walk like that. If you do the Parakram Marg, it's on the way past. So Dhavanala Kund. So then Krishna camped there overnight. And while everyone was resting, a big forest fire came in the middle of the night. And then the forest fire was raging. There were two forest fires, actually. There was that one, and there was another one when Krishna was with his friends. So when the forest fire was coming, it was surrounding in all directions, a huge fire. And Krishna said to his friends, close your eyes. So everyone closed their eyes. And Krishna, he took the whole forest fire, and he just put it in his hand, and it was just like a little drop of water. And then he just took it like that. So this is unlimited power. So these living entities, these personalities, they have unlimited power. This is Krishna, this is Lord Shiva. So we should worship these people. We should not worship someone who is limited in power. If you see that very nice video that Tamal Krishna Maharaj made many, many years ago, 30 or so years ago, called Gods, Demigods and Incarnations. Like that. Very good video where he exposes those who are false gods. Because God means unlimitedly powerful. It doesn't mean somebody just makes a little bit of gold or pulls out a little bit of ash or something like that. It has to be unlimitedly powerful. So this is Krishna. He is unlimitedly powerful God. And Lord Shiva is practically as powerful as Krishna, practically. So he just takes the whole the poison in the universe and just takes it like that. So this is who we worship. We worship these personalities, not some cheap god. Any points? Okay. Exalted, self-satisfied persons who preach to the entire world think of your lotus feet constantly within their hearts. However, when persons who do not know your austerity see you moving with Uma, they misunderstand you to be lusty. Or when they see you wandering in the crematorium, they mistakenly think that you are ferocious and envious. Certainly that they are shameless. They cannot understand your activities. Crematorium?
It is therefore said Vaishnavera Priya Mudra Vignena Bujhaya. Even the most intelligent person cannot understand what a Vaishnava like Lord Shiva is doing or how he is acting. Those who are conquered by lusty desire and anger cannot estimate the glories of Lord Shiva, whose poison is always transcendental, whose position is always transcendental. In all the activities associated with lusty desires, Lord Shiva is an implement of Atma Rama. Ordinary person, therefore, should not try to understand Lord Shiva and his activities. One who tries to criticize the activities of Lord Shiva is shameless.
So what are the points? Anything else?
See, when people see him in crematorium, why do they think he's ferocious and envious?
Well, usually someone who's in a crematorium is very scary.
Envious also.
Envious means they might attack you or hurt you or something like that.
Okay.
So if you go into a crematorium, you'd be very scared to go in there at night time. So people, they see Lord Shiva in those places, so they think he must be some ghost or something.
Okay.
Bhuteshwara. He's surrounded by ghosts and goblins and all these things. So Lord Shiva is always transcendental. And there's the difference between Lord Shiva and us. I'd say we are transcendental. We cannot sit with our wife on our lap when we give Bhagavatam class. And expect people to take us seriously. Because that is not transcendental. But when Lord Shiva does it, it is completely transcendental. He's sitting there and sages, like the four Kumaras, Kuvera, other great personalities, they sit there, but Parvati is sitting on his lap while he is speaking. But he is completely unaffected, and those who are also transcendental, they are completely unaffected. So when Maharaj Chitraketu flew over Lord Shiva, he smiled, but he understood Lord Shiva's position. But he just thought, you know, it's quite funny. He's sitting there with his wife on his lap giving Bhagavatam class. So Lord Shiva also smiled back. And then there was some joking words between them. Chitraketu said, what sort of renunciant are you? You act like you're renounced, but then you sit there with the wife on the lap. And then Lord Shiva said, so what sort of a person are you? You're just flying around the universe with girls in your plane. So they're just having some jokes between them. Parvati got upset, but they understood each other's transcendental position. And then Lord Shiva, he covers himself with ashen like that, but we are told to take bath every day. If we try to follow Lord Shiva and we become muchi, if we follow Lord Shiva and we don't bathe properly and keep ourselves clean, our consciousness will become degraded. We will fall into the mode of ignorance. Therefore, grihasthas are meant to take bath twice every day. That is the standard. Right there. The sannyasis are meant to take bath three times a day. That is their standard. Brahmacharya says minimum once a day. So we're meant to stay clean. We cannot imitate Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva can stay dirty, it doesn't affect his consciousness. If we don't bathe regularly, it will affect our consciousness. That's one of the reasons why the sannyasis take bath three times a day, because it keeps their consciousness pure. It assists them in staying in the mode of goodness, being unaffected by the material energy. When you take bath, it is purifying. So when we take bath, it is said that we're meant to take bath in warm water and then finish with the cool water. And the cool water purifies the consciousness, purifies the subtle body. So when you take a cold bath, the subtle body becomes purified. The mind becomes purified. So it is necessary for us to bathe regularly. Lord Shiva can do whatever he wants to do because he doesn't get affected anyway. But if you don't take bath for a couple of days, you'll see what happens to your consciousness. Any points?
So what's the meaning of this sentence? In all the activities associated with lusty desires, Lord Shiva is an implement of Atmaram.
It means that he is always in the spiritual platform. He's in Shuddha Sattva.
Okay.
Lord Shiva is in Shuddha Sattva. Which mode of material nature are we in?
Shuddha Sattva. Ignorance.
Which mode are we in?
Ignorance?
We're in all the modes. We're affected by all them, goodness, passion and ignorance, continuously. But Lord Shiva is above all three, therefore he doesn't get affected by anything. Any other points? Even personalities like Lord Brahma and other demigods cannot understand your position, for you are beyond the moving and non-moving creation. Since no one can understand you in truth, how can one offer you prayers? It is impossible. As far as we are concerned, we are creatures of Lord Brahma's creation. Under the circumstances, therefore, we cannot offer you adequate prayers, but as far as our ability allows, we have expressed our feelings. O greatest of all rulers, your actual identity is impossible for us to understand. As far as we can see, your presence brings flourishing happiness to everyone. Beyond this, no one can appreciate your activities. We can see this much and nothing more. Mahatmaji.
When the demigods offered these prayers to Lord Shiva, their inner purpose was to please him so that he would rectify the disturbing situation created by the halahal poison. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.20, Kamel stays there, Hrt Yana, Padyante, and Devta. When one worships demigods, this is certainly because of deep rooted desires he wants fulfilled by the mercy of those demigods. People are generally attached to the worship of demigods for some motive.
So, what are the points?
We worship Krishna ahaspi apatyata. And those who worship demigods, they have got motivation, some motivation.
Anything else?
People worship demigods for material benefits, and even demigods worship higher personalities and usually for evolution and most of the time, demigods go to Lord Vishnu and other engagements and even now engagement to Lord Shiva for solving the problem.
Anything else?
Religious devotees like Lord Shiva do not go to Krishna or Vishnu just for material things because they are above the material nature, things of material nature, and they just like to chant the names and enjoy the place. But the nature of the devotee.
Any other points? They're just flattering because they're motivated, they want something from. Okay, why doesn't everyone turn off their phones at the same time? Anything else? So the Bhagavatam is teaching us ahoitupi apratihata. That devotional service should be unmotivated. Whereas we see in the Bhagavatam there are many examples of motivated devotional service also. Because then it makes us understand what is our position. Because we are not yet on the platform of unmotivated devotional service. We have motivations in our devotional service. We don't do devotional service just because it makes Krishna happy. We do devotional service for many other benefits also. Yeah, many other motivations. What are some of the motivations why we do our devotional service?
Money.
For money? We do devotional service for money?
For Lord Shiva. We do devotees of Lord Shiva.
No, I'm saying why do we do it? What are some of the motivations we have?
Fear of the material world.
Yeah, fear of the material world. Like that. But is that negative to our devotional service? Why not?
Because I heard Jagatarini Mataji from saying that it is always good for devotees to come here in the world.
And Jiva Goswami, he mentions in the Sandarbhas, I can't remember what the Sanskrit is. It's something like Bhakti Mata Karma or something. I can't remember the exact term he uses. But he says that sometimes, as sadhakas, we do devotional service, but while we're doing devotional service, we have a certain material motivation. We don't want to take birth again in the material world, or we don't want to suffer, or something like that. And he says that is not inconducive, or it does not disrupt the attempt of the devotee to get to pure devotional service. Even though the desire itself is not pure devotional service, but it does not obstruct us from getting. I can't remember the exact Sanskrit, but I have to look it up. I haven't read it for a long time. But so, for devotees, we may have certain things which are material motives, but they don't stop us from reaching Krishna. If they're dovetailed in Krishna's service, properly. That's why Rupa Goswami defines anyabhilashita shunyam, as opposed to anyabhilash. Anyabhilashita. When he adds the word ta, it means other desires may be there, but they must be used in Krishna's service. And if we can't use those desires in Krishna's service, then we must renounce them. Right? So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as we've explained many times over the years, what does he say is the most powerful desire that we have in our consciousness? Pratishtha. The most powerful desire that motivates us in devotional service is desire for pratishtha, for fame or recognition from others. That's the main thing which motivates us. And Bhakti Chitta Swami said one time, he said, many of the leaders in ISKCON would not stay in their position if it was not for that desire for prestige. It very much motivates us. It's intoxicating. It's why we came to the material world in the first place, because we wanted recognition. So it's very, very subtle. Very subtle. So you have to analyze your heart. And Prabhupada comments that quite often the weed looks like the creeper, the bhakti lata, or the actual creeper devotion. Sometimes we think the weed is the same thing, because then we gain some ability or some influence or some potency in devotional service. Other people recognize us, other people glorify us, people even bow down to us. So we see that people offer us, and then we think, oh, I must be advancing. Or I must be advanced now, because everyone's offering me so much respect. But it can be, the motivation for our devotional service can be pratishtha. It's very subtle, it's very hard to work it out. So you constantly need devotees around you, because devotees will point these things out, especially advanced devotees. Don't surround yourself with junior devotees all the time, because all the junior devotees, they can't recognize these problems and they'll just glorify you. But the more advanced devotees will see what your actual motivation is and they'll correct you. Okay. Any points?
What sort of material desires you can have, it doesn't disrupt?
It doesn't disrupt? Yeah. Like the desire to, as we said, to get out of the material world or to end our suffering or like that. The desire itself is not pure, but it does not obstruct us from trying to attain pure devotional service.
Okay.
Any other points?
The desire to be to the panasas when we pray to the Lord.
Yeah, it's material. It's a material desire because it's a desire other than the desire to please Krishna. So it comes under the category that Jiva Goswami explains, that it's something which does not obstruct, but in and of itself, it's not what a pure devotee prays to Krishna for. The pure devotee goes to Krishna and says, Krishna, can you give me some service? How can I serve you? How can I assist your servants? So it's not that. You know, it's something to do with us. So therefore, it's not pure, but it doesn't obstruct pure devotional service. On our level, it's necessary. We have to pray like that. We have to pray. One time, Prabhupada said, the only prayer that we should offer to the deities is, please give me strength to serve you. One time he said that. He said many things. He said, you know, many prayers we can offer the deities, but one time he said, the only prayer we should offer is, please give me strength to serve you. Any other points? Where is it? Which one? Yeah, you could say like that. It's some sort of mishra. Mixed with something. some sort of mitra. It's not a pure devotional service. Srila Shukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Shiva is always benevolent toward all living entities. When he saw that the living entities were very much disturbed by the poison, which was spreading everywhere, he was very compassionate. Thus he spoke to his eternal consort, Sati, as follows. Lord Shiva said, My dear Bhavani, just see how all the living entities have been placed in danger because of the poison produced from the churning of the ocean of milk. It is my duty to give protection and safety to all living entities struggling for existence. Certainly it is the duty of the master to protect his suffering dependents. People in general, being bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are always engaged in animosity toward one another. But devotees, even at the risk of their own temporary lives, try to save them. Jamuna Lila.
This is the characteristic of a Vaishnava, Paramukha Buddhi. A Vaishnava is always unhappy to see the conditioned souls unhappy. Otherwise, he would have no business teaching them how to become happy. In materialistic life, people must certainly engage in activities of animosity. Materialistic life is better compared to Samsara Dharma, a blazing forest fire that automatically takes place. Lord Shiva and his followers in the Parampara system try to save people from this dangerous condition of materialistic life. This is the duty of devotees following the principles of Lord Shiva and belonging to the Rudra Sampradaya. There are four Vaishnava Sampradayas and the Rudra Sampradaya is one of them because Lord Shiva, Rudra, is the best of the Vaishnavas, Vaishnavana Yatha Shambhu. Indeed, as we shall see, Lord Shiva drank all the poison for the benefit of humanity.
Any points?
The devotees always think about others.
Anything else?
Bhavani also supported me.
Pardon?
Bhavani also supported Lord Shiva. He spoke. He was able to do this.
So what's your point?
Yeah. It's a good thing we learned from him.
I support
See, the way I see it, the wife always tries to protect the husband. But she is so great, she thought about so many other people rather than her own husband. Because she knew that Lord Shiva is so great. It's because she knew that Lord Shiva is so great and he can do anything.
So Prabhupada is explaining that the nature of the devotee is paradukha dukhi, cannot tolerate to see that the living entities are unhappy. So you can't be a member of ISKCON and not do some preaching. It's not the mood. Prabhupada said preaching is the family business. It is what we are obliged to do. One time one of the devotees said to Prabhupada, how do we repay you? And Prabhupada said, you cannot. But he said, but if you would like to try, then preach vigorously like me. So that's the only way we can repay the spiritual master. You can't repay the spiritual master, but by preaching vigorously, doing some preaching activity, then you can begin to pay the debt. And the spiritual master will be satisfied. So you can't be a member of ISKCON and not preach. It has to be there. Either you preach directly or you assist the preachers. One or the other. Like that. But you have to be engaged. Right? And as grihasthas, we are obliged to financially support the institution. Devotees have to give money on a weekly basis to the Melbourne Temple. Right? And then on top of that, then you can give to whatever else you want. But everyone has to give something to support the preaching. come around and take paper plates full of prasadam home. You can't just take from the temple, but you have to give. That is the point. So what is the greatest service that we can offer to ISKCON? It is preaching. And by preaching, then, we begin to repay Prabhupada. And repay the spiritual master. So Lord Shiva always moved, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He travelled for 6 years, right, and preached all around. Then he went back to Puri and then he did his bhajan. So Prabhupada says, at the end of your life, when all of your passion and ignorance is spent, then you can go to Mayapur Vrindavan and chant the Hare Krishna mantra 24 hours a day. But you have to preach first. And then the devotee said to Prabhupada, then Prabhupada, why don't you retire and go to Mayapur Vrindavan? And Prabhupada said, I want the benediction to go on fighting for Krishna like Arjuna until my last breath. So that was Prabhupada's mood. And Prabhupada was still translating his Bhaktivedanta purports up until one day before he left this planet. Still preaching. And he even said in 1977, when he was laying on his bed in Vrindavan, in 1977, Prabhupada said, they think the old man is dead. Like his opposition, those who opposed him, his enemies. Prabhupada said his enemies. And he said, they think the old man is dead. But he is still laying here, beating on the Brihad Mridanga. And the Brihad Mridanga is being heard all over the world. So even when Prabhupada was practically, his body was practically finished, but still he was just there preaching. And that sound vibration was going all over the planet. And in 1977, whenever Prabhupada, he was very weak, but whenever they came in to read the monthly Sankirtan report from around the world, Prabhupada would have the devotees sit him up in his bed, and he would sit up, and he would listen to all the scores. From every single devotee, every single book, all over the world. And sometimes it would take 1.5 hours to read. And Prabhupada would just sit there and listen. For 1.5 hours, every single score of every devotee in the movement. Srila Prabhupada ki? So that is the mood of the devotee. And we should dedicate our life to preaching Krishna consciousness. Try to help someone. And what does Mother Teresa say? Now, Mother Teresa was a great saint. You heard of Mother Teresa? A very great saint. She said, help someone. And she said, start with the person next to you. Don't worry about the person on the other side of the world. What about the person next to you? They need help. So help someone. Start with the person next to you. So purify the people in your area. And then Krishna consciousness will spread. Any points? Okay. My dear gentle wife, Bhavani, when one performs benevolent activities for others, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is very pleased. And when the Lord is pleased, I am also pleased, along with all other living creatures. Therefore, let me drink this poison for all the living entities may thus become happy because of me. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, after informing Bhavani in this way, Lord Shiva began to drink the poison. And Bhavani, who knew perfectly well the capabilities of Lord Shiva, gave him her permission to do so. Therefore, Lord Shiva, who is dedicated to auspicious, benevolent work for humanity, compassionately took the whole quantity of poison in his palm and drank it. So what does Prabhupada emphasize in the purport? Don't imitate. You can follow the great devotees, but don't imitate the great devotees. Because you cannot do what the great devotees can do. You can follow their instructions, but you cannot imitate. And sometimes you see devotees, they try to act like they are more advanced than what they are. Try to chant too many rounds or try to act on a level which is above them. In other words, they're trying to imitate, not follow. So we have to be very careful about trying to act more advanced than what we actually are in devotional service. Because false renunciation can lead to a fall down. Sometimes we want to give up eating sweets. When I was a brahmachari, sometimes we go through phases. We'd only eat sweets once a week, right, on the Sunday feast. But most weeks, you know, I'd only last till Wednesday or Thursday. No sweets, only once a week. But then we get to Wednesday or Thursday and then fall down. And then next week, try to do it again. I did it sometimes. A couple of weeks we did it, but most of the time we would fall down. Like that. So don't try to get to a platform which is above and beyond you. Prabhupada actually said to Umapati Swami, he said, not too much renunciation, not too much sense gratification. He said that Krishna consciousness means the middle path. Don't be too renounced, but don't be too much of an enjoyer. Just be in the middle. Devotees are like that. And we don't worry too much about renunciation. And don't get too much into sense gratification. Don't renounce your sweets and then have too many. Sometimes I would have big fall downs. You know, we wouldn't eat sweets, and then I get to Wednesday, and then we go into the cool room at like 9 o'clock at night. And back in those days, these days all the sweets go. Yeah. But back in those days, there wasn't so many devotees around. So 9 o'clock at night, quite often there'd be rasgullas left from Mangalati time. So we'd go into the cool room and eat like 6 rasgullas or something. Like we'd eat too many sweets. So that's false renunciation. So you should not imitate and try to be on a platform that you're not natural on. Just have one sweet a day, that's better. Just be balanced. Some devotees say no sweets, but just have one a day, that's okay. Okay. As if in defamation, the poison born from the ocean of milk manifested its potency by marking Lord Shiva's neck with a bluish line. That line, however, is now accepted as an ornament of the Lord. It is said that the great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worship, the highest method of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. So Prabhupada points out in the purport that Krishna, if you surrender to him and you preach, he will give you unlimited facility. And Prabhupada is writing that from realization. Because Prabhupada preached for Krishna, he gave his whole existence for preaching, and Krishna gave him so much facility. So if we dedicate ourselves to preaching, Krishna will give so much facility. And we will become recognized by Krishna. Prabhupada said the best way to become recognized by Krishna is by preaching boldly. So when you preach boldly, then Krishna will recognize you. He will see you. You don't have to worry about seeing Krishna. Krishna will come and see you. He says, who is this person who is preaching on my behalf? Boldly. Upon hearing of this act, everyone including Bhavani, the daughter of Maharaj Daksha, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and the people in general, very highly praise the deed performed by Lord Shiva, who is worshipped by the demigods and who bestows benedictions upon the people. Scorpions, cobras, poisonous drugs, and other animals whose bites are poisonous took the opportunity to drink whatever little poison had fallen and scattered from Lord Shiva's hand while he was drinking. So, Jogeshwara Prabhu, would you like to read them?
Mosquitoes, jackals, dogs, and other varieties of venomous or animals whose bites are poisonous drank the poison of Samudra Manthan, the Chain Ocean, since it was available after it fell from the palms of Lord Shiva.
Okay, so what are the points?
So this again indirectly has come from the Lord himself, for the great devotee. The propensity for the process of would be directly on Krishna.
Any other points?
All these insects and all these things, the features have the Mahaprasad of Lord Shiva. So we have to know that we are dreaming about the next
kingdom. Anything else?
The Lord didn't want to change the characteristics of some of the living entities.
So all the poison comes from? Back at the beginning, all the poison entered into these creatures. And now they all have a little bit, and when they bite you, they can... It's like I got bitten on the ear by a spider, and it's still a lump there. It bit me a couple of weeks ago, but it's still like that. So there's a poison goes into your system. So we'll stop there, and next week we'll continue with Chapter 8. Next Monday is Easter Monday. Devotee is going to come for class next Monday. You guys will be up in, you're changing camps for the weekends. But everyone else will be around?
Most of
yeah, Tuesday we're going to do anyway. You're going up? Hands up if you're going to Sydney next weekend. So. Okay, quite a few are going. Oh, a lot are going actually. Hands up if you're not going. Not so many. Okay. Should we have a class on Monday? Or? Huh? Okay, you don't want to do class. What about those who are going to be here? You want to do a class on Monday or not? I'm not asking you if you're going to Sydney. I'm saying those who are going to be here.
Yes.
You want a class on Monday? Okay. One does? What do you think? Well, all those guys are not going to be here, so. Well, what do you think is practical? Okay, so we're doing the Tuesday. You guys are going to be here on the Tuesday?
Yeah.
You'll be here, though? You'll come? Okay. You'll come on Tuesday? Okay, so we won't have class on Monday. Sorry. So we won't have class on Monday, but we'll do on Tuesday. You might have to have a double class. Not that, so. Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Yeah.